This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the one! The Red Raider!
Was he up the 10? Was he up the right sideline?
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS champion.
Hello and welcome into the Republic of Football podcast. Got a two-man wolf pack today. Me and Mike Craven talking some ball. Our regular host, Ismail Johnson, is neck deep in March Madness right now. So he's doing the Zone Star State with Matthew Bruni, and Mallory's working on some lower third graphics right now. So Craven and I, we're always thinking about football. I already got hit with the ice cube on my bracket on the ESPN Tournament Challenge. It happened in record time this year.
I think I'm third in our office pool after watching zero dribbles of college basketball outside of some Big 12 in-state. You know, I watched some Baylor, Tech, Texas, Houston, obviously, but had no understanding of what was going on around me, but I'm third. I think I'm tied with third with Greg Tepper's five-year-old son. So that shows you how much really is knowledge-based when these tournaments come out, or this March Madness brackets.
What was your strategy? Because I'm sitting at a cool 19th right now. It's been a tough year. What'd you do? What's your strategy?
Yeah, I pick based on like coaches, and that's basically it. Just like vibes, you know, a lot of guesswork. You know, no real strategy to it. I probably did it in 7 minutes on Thursday morning, you know, an hour before the tournament started, because I was trying to be part of the team and compete in our tournament bracket. And we'll see if I get my money back. That's really all I'm hoping for.
I'm calling bull on Tepper's five-year-old son filling out that entire bracket. I think Tepper had his five-year-old son put his name on it, so that way, if it does bad, we're making fun of his son, and if it does good, we lost to his son.
That sounds right. That sounds like that could be correct. Yeah.
Well, all right. That's enough basketball talk. That's all the capacity I have for it right now. Let's talk spring football. So, first off, going into the Texas 10s, Craven, you've been dropping these all the past 2 weeks, really ramping up for magazine season. You've been a busy man, Craven. You just got married on Saturday, and instead of a honeymoon, you're going to 10 colleges in 17 days. So it's going straight into magazine season. What do you think? I got a couple questions here. What's the strongest position group you think in Texas right now?
I think linebacker is probably up there. You know, you got Torian York, Anthony Hill, Ben Roberts at the top of that. There's a lot of strong players there. I mean, wide receiver is always going to be probably the most populated. Some of that's because three players at that position start and five or six of them, you know, get snaps. And we have a 7-on-7 state here in Texas where we produce a whole lot of wide receivers. The offenses here feature wide receivers. And so that one may be the hardest to slim down to 10 because there's 16, 17 available. And then outside of that, I would say running back this year was really strong. There was a lot of really good running backs across the state. I think the game is getting bigger and more physical again, and going back to running the football and having tight ends and not so much spread. Even the air raid teams are more balanced than they used to be. And so running backs are starting to be commodities again in the state, especially the all-purpose guys that can also catch out of the backfield.
So, okay, which one did you get the most backlash for? Because I'm thinking it's linebacker, because you got Ben Roberts at Texas Tech, who had the most tackles as a true freshman there since 1980.
Well, he was a redshirt freshman.
Redshirt freshman, okay. Yeah. So then you got Anthony Hill.
That's a distinction in my head. I am big on the, like, I don't pick, like, redshirt freshmen for freshman All-American teams and stuff like that. Like, I just don't think you're a freshman if you've like been on campus for a year. Linebacker, yeah, probably was a good backlash.
Like Ben Simmons. You didn't like Ben Simmons winning rookie of the year when he was sat out his whole first year?
Yeah, you're not a rookie. I think Chet Holmgren's under that same thing right now, right? Like, you're not a rookie. You're not a freshman if you've been there. If you're taking sophomore, junior level classes and you've been in the weight room and all practicing for a year, you're not technically a freshman. Like, I know you are on the field. You're a freshman for like 4 years now, the way that they do eligibility. So who knows? But yeah, I think linebacker was a pushback. Quarterback, always kind of gets a lot of pushback. I don't think at the number one position, I think everybody was fine with Quinn Ewers being the top guy there. But you start looking at the transfers, like, is Jordan McLeod below Daquan Finn? Should Daquan Finn be in the top five? How many people watch Toledo? Where does Luke McCown at UTSA fall into that? So I think quarterback always generates the most kind of pushback just because of the nature of the position.
And is there one that's a weakest position group right now that you're looking at in preliminary, right? They've got time to improve, but right now, just whether unproven or not a lot of guys that we know about, what's going on there?
Yeah, tight ends, a tough one always, just because of, again, kind of going back to why wide receiver is so populated, just the way we play offense by and large in the state of Texas is very wide receiver heavy and not so much tight end heavy. You have the occasional studs like an RJ Maryland at SMU or Drake Dabney that just transferred from Baylor to TCU, Oscar Cardenas at UTSA, but you don't see a lot of, you know, there's not 15 tight ends to pick from, right? There's like eight or nine. And you kind of double dip into some schools that use the tight end a lot, like Tech or A&M or Texas, to fill out the list.
The thing that sticks out to me with wide receiver and tight end is just how many transfers there are there. Like, okay, so wide receiver, the first two are Isaiah Bond from Texas and Josh Kelly from Texas Tech. And then at tight end, it's three out of the five top five guys. Jalen Conyers at Texas Tech, Drake Dabney at TCU, and then Amari Nyblack at Texas. Is there a reason you think that wide receiver and tight end are so transfer heavy just as positions?
I think there's just more of them, okay. Right? Like if you go into the portal, you can find 50 wide receivers that can play. I mean, Joey Hobert last year at Texas Tech kind of proved that. He came from like the FCS level and like went off. Like you can go find some wide receivers. A&M's brought in Cyrus Allen from La Tech. Like I don't think that there's a big jump from G5 to FCS to P5 at the skill position. You don't have to be big, strong, and handle that beating. You can't find that at offensive tackle or defensive tackle or even in the linebacker positions. Like the bigger the players are, the harder they are to find in the portal. So I just think it's the nature of that position being, I wouldn't say easier, but I think it's more popular, like, right? And I think it's developed more and it's probably there's just more guys there at that position to pick from, I think. And that's why you see the portal be so much successful at those positions than maybe along the offensive line, defensive line.
Is the offensive and defensive line the hardest positions to portal, you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially offensive linemen. One, because it's just hard to play offensive line. Like there's 134 FBS programs in the country. They're not times five that good offensive linemen, right? Like it's like how in the NFL you can't find 32 good quarterbacks. Like you just cannot find enough offensive linemen to play. And then the second part of that is if you are a good offensive lineman, you are incentivized to stay, right? Like if a wide receiver comes into the coach's office and demands a 25% raise in their NIL over a year, you can let that guy go and replace that production. You can't at left tackle. Like you got to beg those guys to stay. You got to give them most of the NIL money or whatever they're asking for. And so you just don't see those type of all conference players transitioning as much. I do wonder if some of it's personality as well, like if offensive linemen are just quote unquote hashtag built different.
Pretty,
you know, and it, well, they did. It's more of a it's a position of development, right? Like wide receivers can walk onto campus and play. It's hard to do that as a guard because you're going from, you know, blocking teenagers to blocking mortgage, you know, payers, and so that's just a different life, right? And so I think some of it is that as well. So I think there's multiple reasons in play that why you can't go. It's why we haven't seen teams portal their way to success along the offensive line.
But Deion Sanders sure is going to try.
All right. So is Texas Tech.
That's what I wrote about too in the roster. That was my biggest question on Texas Tech going into this year. Is they're low key trying the Deion Sanders formula?
Yeah, I think four of their five expected starters are, you know, either transferred in this year or last year, right, with Ty Buchanan. So, they're going to try to do it that way as they organically develop the young guys behind the scenes, you know, for 2025 and beyond.
All right. The last question I got about the Texas Tens. Who's a guy that's not ranked number one right now, but you could see being ranked number one by the time the season's over? And why is it Joey Hobert right now?
Yeah, it could be Joey just because of the stats that they're going to put up at Texas State. You know, I don't know what Isaiah Bond's like production is going to be because there's so much talent around him. You know, same at Texas Tech. That's a crowded wide receiver room. Is Josh Kelly going to get 100 passes? I think Joey could get, you know, those kind of ungodly numbers there at wide receiver. I'm going to go with Anthony Hill. You know, Torian York had the bigger freshman year because he was asked to do more. He was a starter for basically the whole year and had an excellent freshman season. But Anthony Hill is Anthony Hill, right? Like all of us that watch high school football and do recruiting or prep stuff just know the talent, the upside, the ceiling that he has. If used correctly, if he takes that next step as a you know off-ball linebacker, it wouldn't be surprising at all if this time November Anthony Hill's the best defensive player in the state, much less the best linebacker in the state.
It's kind of like Torian York had way more tackles, but the tackles Anthony Hill made, he's just throwing guys through the crust of the earth.
Yeah, I mean, he has some abilities that Torian York is just not blessed with. And, you know, that's no fault to Torian York. He maximizes his ability as well as anybody else and is going to be a stud SEC linebacker, probably NFL player for a long time. But Anthony Hill just has some, like, he's just size, speed, like, there's just things that you can't, I mean, that's lab built, you know, there's a reason. That's what separates those five stars from the four stars, right? It's not that they're better football players necessarily. They just have a ceiling that the other guys can't get to because you can't teach 6'3", 225 with that kind of speed. I think that's what separates Anthony Hill and what gives him that ability to be, you know, the kind of that dude if he develops.
Well, I hate to keep it on Texas for another breakout player I have, but I saw Jaden Blue at number 7, and I was like, if we could bet on who could end the year as number 1, I would take a flyer on Jaden Hill because Jaden Blue, excuse me. I know CJ Baxter's over him right now, but there's something about Jaden Blue. He just has like a different gear. I think he got timed as the fastest player in last year or spring ball. I was listening to the Eyes on Texas podcast where we jumped on and Aaron brought up that stat. And you see it on the play. That's not one where, oh, Jaden Blue's the fastest guy. I had no idea. You wouldn't think that. He is electric. He's like a Ferrari coming out of the garage. I know Cedric Baxter was just hurt all last year, basically. So he could also be a lot more explosive. But I don't know. What do you think about that, Graydon? What do you think about my Jaden Blue hype right now?
Yeah, I totally get it. You know, I was on the recruiting bait when Jaden Blue was the 4-star recruit out of Klein Kane that skipped his senior year. Yeah, you can't teach that kind of speed, that athleticism and Sark's offense. Obviously, that's what he wants. He wants big humans up front and fast guys out wide. He can do both. I like CJ Baxter a little bit more just because he's bigger, and I think he's going to handle the SEC and what Sark wants out of the running back position. But I think Jaden Blue is going to be the biggest wild card at that position. If you can have a 1-2 punch, his career has been interesting, right? You like leave early from high school or not leave early, but skip your senior year from high school. When that was kind of in vogue, right? You thought that was going to be a trend. It ended up not happening all that much. And then all of a sudden you're like behind Bijan Robinson and Roshan Johnson, right? You're not going to play there. And then Jonathan Brooks kind of comes out of nowhere and it kind of takes that job from you and CJ Baxter. And it seems like behind the scenes, he kind of struggled for consistency. But if he's turned in that corner and is a guy that they count on, like athleticism was never the question. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he was number 1.
I mean, you're going to struggle with consistency when you don't play football for 3 years.
Almost. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Are you surprised that didn't – I don't want to go on a huge long diatribe about this, but are you surprised that didn't become more of a strategy? Because I remember when Jaden Blue skipped his senior year, I was like, okay, we might start seeing this now.
Yeah, in a lot of states you've become incentivized to play. And then I think at the end of the day, like kids just want to play football. You know, I think we all as adults want to rush to judgment on like what their motives are. And like kids just don't love ball anymore. Right. Like it is not the same as we were, but I don't think that's true. Like they play 7-on-7 year round. Like they're more active in football than they were in 2002 when I was in high school. Right. You didn't have year round anything. Coaches weren't even allowed in the weight room in the summer. Or you had to do Adams course and things that Carter's never even heard of before. So I just don't think it's I think at the end of the day, if you can't do what Quinn Ewers did and go make $1 million from Levi's to go to Ohio State, like you're going to stay in high school and you're going to play. And maybe the early signing period in August changes that a little bit. Right. Like if you can sign in August, you know, if that rule kind of comes to fruition and you can be locked into a national letter of intent in August before your senior year, maybe some guys start taking that off, but you're probably not going to play as a true freshman. So it feels like it's hard to go 2 years without football. I just don't see it ever being a very popular thing.
Yeah, that Jaden Blue decision was red meat for Odessa Permian alums from 1990.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, COVID was going on. It was a lot of weird stuff, you know, and so I think there was unique circumstances we won't see again.
All right, let's transition from the Texas 10s. Keep it locked in on TexasFootball.com. How many more positions do we have, Craven?
Two. Well, one will come out tomorrow. That's offensive line. I just did that one. Kelvin Banks is the number one. No surprise there, obviously. And then cornerback and safety are left, and that'll do that for that.
All right. So let's also talk about we're in the heat of spring ball. Most teams, I think every team started at least kind of like halfway through right now. We're about to be doing our magazine visits. And as we mentioned before, Craven will be hitting up 10 in 2 weeks or something like that. It's going to be fast and furious hitting the ground. Let's talk some position battles, because aside from just looking at how jacked guys are in shirts and shorts, spring ball is for position battles. Craven, what's your number one that you're looking for right now this spring?
So number one is going to be at right tackle at Texas A&M, and that's going to be Demetrius Crownover versus Ruben Fathery. Kind of a multifaceted reason that this fascinates me. A&M's offensive line has to get better. We talk about the Jimbo offense and the Bobby Petrino, but I mean, really, offensive line stunk. And if the offensive line had been better, who knows what that offense looks like. I think Trezun at left tackle, really good, right? He's solidified in there. They're fine at left tackle. If Bryce Foster's healthy, they're fine at center. Cam Dewberry is going to play one of the guard positions. So that leaves left tackle or right tackle and probably left guard. And if one of those two guys, if Fathery or Crownover can be the guy at right tackle and can gain trust from Colin Klein and the new staff to be right, now all of a sudden Chase Besantis can play left guard. That opens up a lot more to your depth. Now you have a pretty clear starting five with a couple transfers as your backup utility interior offensive lineman and a Ruben Fathery that can bounce around as your backup tackle if Crownover wins that job. If Fathery or Crownover isn't good enough and they walk out of spring questioning that right tackle position, you either got to go portal, which we talked about earlier, is hard to find. You're not going to find an SEC caliber starting right tackle in the portal in April, most likely. Or you're going to have to move Besantis back out to tackle, and now you have a hole at one of your guard positions. And so to me, the offensive line at A&M is the biggest question mark on that team. I think the defense is going to be fine. The quarterback's fine. Skill positions are good. Like I think everywhere at A&M, it screams 8, 9, 10 win season. That offensive line was just bad, and it's been bad for a few years. And if they can't figure out the right tackle spot, it's going to continue to be bad.
What happened to Fathery last year? Because I saw he played like 5 games. He seemed like he was just never really healthy. Was it from a spring ball injury? Do you know that he had like a lower body injury going on?
I think it was just nagging stuff. You know, it was like one thing here and then you get back going and it's another thing there. The development behind the scenes was really bad. There was a lot of dysfunction on that staff, obviously. Not a lot of mandatory things, you know, like there was just a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that didn't lend itself to development. And I think some young players kind of fell into that trap and weren't all self-motivators. And now with a new staff and a fresh slate and some new expectations, I think maybe you see some guys start reaching their ceilings, because it wasn't just Fathery. Like Bryce Foster's in that same group, right? Where it's like came out of nowhere in that same class as offensive linemen. They were going to be the next superstars for an Aggie team that has produced offensive linemen. Both of them play a lot as true freshmen, all SEC freshman type talents. And they're worse now than they were then, right? How does that happen? There's got to be some coaching culture stuff going on there. I think maybe a new slate helps some of those Aggies kind of find themselves again.
Well, A&M fell into that trap too that the Texas teams did with Tom Herman, where Caden Stearns comes out as a freshman and he's like a Thorpe Award finalist and then just does not develop whatsoever. The freshman was the best season, you know, and that's kind of where you hope now, okay, A&M, Mike Elker coming in, that will happen more. You also have another right tackle question for the Longhorns. Let's keep it in Austin. What's going on with Texas's right tackle? Because I think everything else is fine, right?
I think Texas has the front runner for Joe Moore Award for best offensive line in the country up front. I mean, Kelvin Banks is the first or second lineman off the board in the NFL draft next year, with the left tackle from LSU having a say in that. Hayden Connor, DJ Campbell, Connor Robinson, like all those guys can play. Center's going to be fine. Jake Majors is, you know, a doctorate now at the center position for the University of Texas. And so that just leaves Christian Jones's spot. Who's going to replace him at right tackle? Brandon Baker is a big time 5-star offensive lineman that has gotten kind of comparisons to Kelvin Banks. And I think the staff sees him as the heir apparent to Banks at left tackle. And he's going to be in competition with a monster of a man. Like Cam Williams is, as big as he gets, right? Like if you're walking down an alley, like that's one of those dudes, like DJ Campbell, Cam Williams on the right side of that offensive line can bully some SEC defenses. I think Cam Williams is going to win out because of his experience and just being a little bit more developed in the body transformation. But for Texas, if you have a swing tackle like Brandon Baker behind that can like replace one of those dudes if somebody gets injured, it's a good spot to be in. But that's going to be a fun battle to watch because that's what, I mean, for most of your adult life, this is what Texas has lacked and why they've stunk is because they didn't have depth like this to compete against each other. Like these are the good old days where all of a sudden, you know, these big freshmen, awesome, you know, offensive tacklers are coming in and pushing some of the elder statesmen. Like it's a good place to be in for Texas.
Yeah, I was reading up on Orange Nation. Westcott Eberts, I think, was one who wrote it. And they were talking about, you know, Kyle Flood loves the big humans, but there is such a thing as almost too big. And Cam Williams was teetering on that. Like, he was 369 last year as a sophomore. They said he looks noticeably leaner now at 360. Like, okay, we'll see. But
a stealthy 360.
Yeah, exactly. Usually when they're like, he looks noticeably leaner, it's like 20-pound difference. But okay, 9 pounds, that's good. He got one start last year versus Kansas State. And on the – I don't know how they calculate PFF grades, but his PFF grade in pass pro was an 85.5, and the run grade was like a 52 or something like that. And I think he also had three false starts in that game. So he – definitely has room to develop, but he has more experience right there. Anwar Richardson, Orange Bloods, he's been one who's reporting that Baker is a standout in winter and in strength conditioning period. I think that's what you're also hearing, Craven. It's just like he comes in and they think he could be the heir apparent to Kelvin Banks, but Kelvin Banks, he is one of one. Like he comes in and starts day one at left tackle. I mean, Brandon Baker could develop into something like that, but are you going to say he comes in day one, SEC starting right tackle? He's only 297 right now, and it's crazy to say only, but that's small for SEC ball.
Yeah, it's a, you know, you don't find many Kelvin Bankses, and that's just not all talent, right? Like that's maturity. You know, Kelvin Banks started his freshman year of high school, so he'd already played 4 years of offensive line at the varsity level as well. He's 27 for 27, right? Like he's been at University of Texas for 27 games and he started for all 27 of them at left tackle. Like that's like Orlando Pace type, history there at Texas. So I think those are too much expectations. And for Banks, he had to, right? Like you're as big as the pot you put in, right? Like you have to grow into that. Like there wasn't anybody else. There wasn't a Cam Williams to push, right? And to let Kelvin kind of like ease into the business. He had to be the left tackle for Texas. I think what's changed in Sark's program at Texas is a guy like Brandon Baker doesn't have to come in and be the guy right away. He can be the guy that pushes the guy and maybe, you know, by the OU game or something like that is just too good to keep off the field or something like that. But I think it's good for Williams to have somebody like Baker to push him. And it's good for Baker to have someone like Williams that keeps the pressure off of just having to be the starter in SEC ball as a right tackle.
That's actually a great point, too, because you forget 2 years ago when Kelvin Banks came in, how bare they were on the offensive line, because now they've recruited so well and changed it around so quickly. All right, I will go for my position battle. I'm going to keep it Power Four. I'm going to keep it the Big 12 after Texas now leave the Big 12, so I guess they're no longer actually Big 12. But TCU's linebackers. The defense is a huge question mark for me for TCU because on paper, you look at TCU last year and you say, hey, the offense scored a touchdown less a game. That's the reason they weren't as good. But that masks the fact that even the national championship year, TCU was giving up 30 points a game. Their offense was just transcendent that year. The Andy Avalos hiring was interesting to me because, one, the timing was a little weird. It was like 2 or 3 weeks after the season. But then also, we were thinking the 3-3-5 in the state of Texas was dead after North Texas and TCU, and Avalos runs the 3-3-5 stack. Now, the difference, Craven, you wrote, is that he has one of those linebackers being used as more of an edge rusher, where I don't think Gillespie was doing that as much. They were just having three guys drop back. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I would say Avalos can be called a 4-2 if you wanted to, right? Like, it's like how UTSA runs an odd man offensive line or a defensive line, and then Trey Moore was kind of the outside linebacker, Lawrence Taylor, like, you know, pass rusher or whatever, but they call it a 3-3-5. I do think Avalos is more pass rush dependent and heavy than Gillespie's. And then I also think the big thing was just Avalos has experience calling college defenses and making adjustments in game and adjusting to the adjustments to where Joe is just, he's an inexperienced defensive coordinator at the college football level, right? He's just kind of thrown into that at a big, big spot very early, and it was exposed on occasions. And so I'm with you. I think you look at it and you go like the offense was obviously a big part, and that some of that's just execution in the red zone, but they have to make more plays defensively. And that's just not going to happen by accident. That's going to happen by aggression. And they just weren't aggressive enough.
Yeah. So my biggest position battle for that defense is linebacker right now. So if we're running more of a 4-2-5, there's like four linebackers right there that all have a chance to start. So Nnamdi Obiazor, I think he has to start. I think he's one of the best. He had the best season last year. I think he is so versatile in pass coverage and blitzing off the edge. But where it gets interesting is who plays that other linebacker spot, because we're 2 years removed from Johnny Hodges being Big 12 Defensive Newcomer of the Year and a second-team All-Conference pick, and he was just so injured last year. He played four games, not a good visual for the white guys with neck pads after Leighton Van Der Esch also had an injury this year. So we also, you know, we're looking at Jamoy Hodge and Caleb Elarms-Orr. They're going to be battling it out. Elarms-Orr, 92 tackles last year at Cal, and I think he's the one who has a chance to compete with Jamoy Hodge. And then Shadrack Banks, obviously the former wide receiver from North Shore. Craven, do you think I'm right in saying we're circling Jamoy Hodge and Caleb Elarms-Orr battling it out, or do you think Johnny Hodges is in that mix too?
No, I think you're right. I think Obiazor is going to start at the kind of the outside linebacker, that kind of edge rusher we were talking about, kind of be that guy on the outside. Johnny Hodges will play one of those linebackers off the ball in the middle. Maybe those guys switch, I don't know. And then, you know, I think it comes down to Elarms-Orr versus Hodge. I think Elarms-Orr is going to win that job. I mean, you don't come into a play. Like, here's the thing with the portal. They can almost tell you. Like, you can watch what's happening and you can see what the coaching staff wants to do behind the scenes, right? You don't bring in a guy with that kind of production to like be your fourth linebacker. Like, maybe he gets there and he's not as good as you thought and he becomes your fourth linebacker. But if all things go well, they're trying to upgrade that spot. I remember being there at the TCU Colorado game and watching Jamoy Hodge kind of be on an island sometimes, you know, against running backs. And it just wasn't it, you know, like he's just not fast enough to do it. They need to get more athletic there at the linebacker spot. Having Hodges, Nnamdi, and then Elarms-Orr there is a big that's now an athletic linebacker core if they're all healthy.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was a great pickup in the transfer portal by them. All right, those are the position battles you can watch out for in the spring. I want to do a little bit of a player draft here, and the parameters for this player draft. What do we want to call it? The players we're most excited to see, or the narratives we're most excited about? How should we frame this, Craven?
Yeah, for me, I try to pick the guys that I'm most excited to kind of watch and see what they become and develop into, you know, and just kind of what they mean for their program.
Okay. All right. Do you want to kick this off? Let's do a little snake draft. You go first, I go second, third. Let's do a snake.
All right, I will go first. I will go Texas State quarterback Jordan McLeod off the top, right? I mean, the last two quarterbacks we've seen with G.J. Kinney, Mack Leftwich, Lindsey Scott, you know, won the Walter Payton Award, which is the Heisman for FCS. T.J. Finley last year goes off and leads the team to 8 wins and a bowl win for the first time ever. You know, Jordan McLeod may be the best of the trio, right? This may be the best quarterback we've seen play for that tandem. Texas State was incredible offensively last year. They bring back a lot of that production at running back and at wide receiver. McLeod can run the ball in a way that Finley couldn't, kind of like Scott could, and that's going to add a new dimension back into the Leftwich Kinney offense. And so if you can add the Sun Belt Offensive Player of the Year to your lineup that is already really good offensively, Texas State may be the most fun offense to watch next year. And I've said it on a podcast before. I think if you take Texas out of the equation, if I was betting on a team in this state to win an FBS conference title next year, I think my leader in the clubhouse would be next up would be Texas State to win the Sun Belt.
I don't think that's a bad pick. And we talked about it. I think this was either last week or 2 weeks ago on ROF. And with all the controversy and the up in the air nature of the quarterback position at Texas State, the way they end up with Jordan McCloud.
A lot of people know this, but the
Is that me? Oops. ESPN. Always playing videos. Anyway, look, ending up with Jordan McCloud out of all those guys, I think he's the best option out of all the guys.
Oh, yeah.
And people forget, too, about Lindsey Scott winning the Walter Payton Man of the Year award. I mean, not Walter Payton. NFL. No, yeah. The Walter Payton Heisman. Dude, 2021 at Nichols, he passed for 2,000 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions. The first year with G.J. Kinney, he goes 4,600 yards, 60 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions. I like that pick, Craven. Have you watched much of Jordan McCloud at JMU? What did you like about him on film?
Yeah, I think the playmaking ability is what sets him apart, right? Like, it doesn't have to be on script. Like, with a quarterback like TJ Finley, you have to draw up the play correctly. It has to go the way that it has to go. The guy's got to get open. The throw's got to be there. And that's not always going to happen, right? I think with Texas State last year, you saw a couple games where the offense got bogged down. They couldn't do much of anything, and they needed a little bit of an X factor to go out and make a play. But you don't have to worry about that anymore. Like, that's what Jordan McCloud's game is kind of off script football. I think a lot like Lindsey Scott. And we've seen with Kinney and Leftwich, them kind of reel in a player like that and put him in a system and then let him go expand it and exploit it and put up those big numbers. And to me, that's what's most exciting. Is it not only is it the player, it's the fit. And he seems like a player that fits perfectly into the system. Because of his ability to go off script and make some plays.
I'm going to keep it at a transfer quarterback as well, and I'm going to go Daquan Finn for my first pick of this draft at Baylor. Look, I am a Blake Shapen truther. I think he caught way too much blame for what happened in Waco. But that's not to say that Daquan Finn couldn't still be an upgrade from what they had last year. And you saw last year, what happened when Blake Shapen went down? Baylor kind of fell off a cliff there without him. So I'm excited to see what Daquan Finn does. Craven, I know you're a Maction guy. I know you're up at Tuesday watching Toledo play football. What can Baylor fans expect from him?
Yeah, I think he's a perfect quarterback for this Jake Spav system. Really accurate in the short intermediate passing game. Like, knows where he wants to go. Is decisive with the football. A solid runner, you know, not maybe the athlete that Jordan McCloud is, but he's, you know, kind of a big dude. He could be powerful. He can get the couple extra yards on a third and one or a fourth and one. He'd be good on the tush push or whatever it's called in the NFL. Like, they could get that into the lineup. I think he's just a dude. He's just a gamer, right? He's a winner. He's been really good at Toledo. I know a lot of people probably don't watch Mac football, but another quarterback that I think was a great fit for the offensive coordinator. And that's what's kind of cool about the transfer portal, right? You don't bring in a new OC like Baylor did, because back in the day you would be stuck in a program shift for a couple of years, right? You'd have round hole square peg all over that roster. Now you can kind of shuffle some guys out and go, hey, this may not be the system for you. Maybe you should go find someplace else to go. And then you can go down to the G5 ranks and find a quarterback that you think fits perfectly for your system. I think it's going to be a big pickup for Baylor. I think the Baylor offense is going to be pretty solid this year. They can figure out the offensive line.
And you saw that shift too with Ashton Hawkins coming from Texas State. I'm excited to see him with Daquan Finn. All right, I'm gonna pick again. And I think I'm going to go Micah Hudson here. Texas Tech wide receiver, the 5-star. Craven, you wrote a feature story about him for the Rising magazine in the fall. Is it fair to say transcendent high school football player? I mean, watching him in 7-on-7, I still remember it vividly how he's a one-man show. And he was kind of a one-man show on that Lake Belton team. Multi-sport athlete. I think he's coming in with expectations to start right away. They think he could potentially be the next Michael Crabtree almost. That's a lot of expectations to put on him, but he's not a guy who kind of shies away from expectations. I don't know, Craven, what do you remember about interviewing Micah Hudson and writing that story about him?
He was a pretty mature 18-year-old, right? Like, he felt pretty confident in his skin. You know, I think these guys are a little bit more polished than they used to be. They've been doing interviews since they were 14 years old. There's money involved now. It's kind of a business. You have a brand. He has his own logo that he designed himself, right? He's putting out his own hype videos. He put himself on the cover of our magazine, right? In a graphic, and put it out there and kind of called his shot. with Baron Morton and stuff like that. So I saw him as a unique character. He didn't seem to be trying to fit into kind of a mold. And I think his actions represent that. Not a lot of five-star wide receivers go to Texas Tech. In fact, zero have. You know, Michael Crabtree was a two-star prospect. He was not seen as kind of the guy until he became that. To kind of go blaze your own trail and not go to A&M or Texas or Ohio State or LSU or Alabama, kind of where all the five stars typically go, is an interesting route. Now, there's a transfer portal exists, and so you don't have to marry yourself into it completely like maybe you used to. But he's going to play. He's going to be in the return game. He's going to be on the football field. That's part of it. He's not playing in the spring, so that's kind of a bummer. I wanted to kind of, when I go up to Lubbock in a week and a half and watch some practice, I wanted to see him. But yeah, transcendent's probably a fine word. I think the only other wide receiver I've seen in my career at the Texas high school level that would measure up to him is Garrett Wilson.
And I want to lump into kind of with the Micah Hudson pick, Baron Morton for me, the Texas Tech quarterback, because he was a guy coming out of high school that he was like the highest rated quarterback they've had in a long time. It wasn't history, right? But it was a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was a really highly touted guy out there, big get for them. He was in Sawyer Robertson's class, too. That was a big deal that they took Morton over him because Robertson's kind of a local Lubbock kid.
And Morton, it's been hard to tell through the first 2 years because he split time year one and was injured a little bit with Tyler Shuck. But now we're going on 2 years of injuries, and he gutted it out last year, and credit to him for gutting it out. But I don't think we ever saw Baron Morton fully healthy last year. So he still is kind of an unknown commodity. And people talk about him as he is the next in line and the prolific quarterback. And it just feels like he's been next up now for the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I think he was a casualty of kind of that extra year of eligibility, right? Like Tyler Shuck just didn't go away. Yeah. You know, like
the coronavirus won't last forever.
Right. Like this is the first offseason Morton's gone into, like, as the dude who's gonna get first team snaps and to work with the first team and to be the quarterback of the program, unquestioned, like the guy. And I think that matters. Like, I think that matters in the spring. It matters in the summer when you call up dudes and you go, hey, meet me at the facility. I want to throw some footballs. They're going to show up more when you're the starter, you know, like when they know the ball getting to them is dependent on you, like all of that stuff. You know, I think it helps with confidence and how you approach things. And so I want to see him with the full Josh Hoover at TCU is the same way. I want to see them after a full off season of being the quarterback, like what that does for their maturation as players on and off the field.
Yeah, exactly right. All right. You take it away, Craven.
My next one up is Jamori Robinson, the linebacker, outside linebacker at UTSA. He is who is tasked with replacing the production of Trey Moore. And we talk about the UTSA offense a lot, but the UTSA defense during Jeff Traylor's tenure has been dependent on an outside linebacker getting sacks. In 2020, it was Charles Wiley with 10. In 2021, it was Clarence Hicks with 10.5. In 2022, Trey Moore with 8. In 2023, Trey Moore with 14. Robinson's got to be the dude. Robinson's got to be the guy who gets off the edge. He had 4.5 sacks last year, 11 tackles for loss. If UTSA is going to be the defense-dependent team they think they're going to have to be, you know, they're replacing Frank Wilson, Joshua Cephas on the offensive side of the ball. That requires a good defense. And for that defense to be good, for the secondary to play well, that requires a big-time pass rusher that can get home. That's got to be Jamori Robinson for UTSA. He's going to be asked to do a lot more than he has in the past. And his production off the edge is going to probably dictate in a lot of ways if UTSA is a 8-9 win football team or one that's competing for a conference championship.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that made me laugh. It was Javi Cardenas from Rivals UTSA, and it was Corey Mose down in Austin. He covers Texas. Talking to Sark this morning, Corey says, Sark mentions UTSA transfer edge Trey Moore is wired right in terms of setting the tone at practice. And Javi just did the thinking emoji, thinking meme. That's another funny part of the transfer portal. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy's coached really well. Like when he just comes in to your team.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing what playing for Jeff Traylor and UTSA does for your football IQ and ability to practice. It's almost like they know what they're doing down there. That's why they're winning so many football games.
Okay. But early prediction for Jamori Robinson. Do you think he has Trey Moore-like capabilities?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's scheme. I think a lot of it's the way it's coached. You know, I don't think he has the upside of a Trey Moore. I think Trey Moore is going to be an NFL football player. But I think you combine Robinson's, you know, physical ability, the scheme, and UTSA's just knack for getting home with multiple guys. I read off three different names. Like, if it had just been Trey Moore getting sacks in this scheme, I'd worry about UTSA getting pressure. But he was just one of three guys who had gotten double-digit sacks for UTSA in 3 years. I think Robinson's going to be okay there. Just because of the way UTSA plays defense and, you know, the American Athletic Conference isn't all that good.
Yep. All right, you go again.
My next one up is going to be Elijah Roberts, defensive end for SMU, a baller. 10 sacks last year, 12 and a half tackles for loss. Needs to be the anchor of that SMU defensive line. Carter, you and I have had this conversation a bunch, I feel like. SMU, really good against the G5, dominated the G5, bullied the G5. But we saw the difference between G5 offensive and defensive lines and P4, P5 offensive and defensive lines. SMU was the perfect test case for seeing the difference between G5 football and P4 football last year. 0-3 against the big boys, struggled to move the ball with the offensive line, struggled to stop the run with the defensive line. Elijah Roberts is a former Miami transfer. I think every single player on SMU's defensive line played P5 football before they got to SMU. Like, I don't know if there's a single player up front that was recruited to G5 football, including recruited to SMU, that is going to play real snaps for the Mustangs in 2024. Roberts is the linchpin of that. And if SMU wants to walk into the ACC and compete right away, guys like Elijah Roberts are going to have to take that next step. I'm excited to see why I have him on the list is he's one of those players. I want to see the difference between G5 and P5 football, right? Like, if next year he has 4.5 sacks and 8 tackles for loss, it's like, oh, okay. It was just a rise up that they just couldn't handle. If he's still putting up the same kind of numbers, then, you know, that tells us a different story.
Well, I tell you what, SMU is the perfect test subject for you as an American Athletic Conference hater because wrecking the AAC life. It was okay. So I was at the TCU SMU game and SMU could not control the line of scrimmage. And that was not a good TCU team last year. I mean, you say what you want about unlucky and injuries, but the 5-7 record after a national championship year is not good. SMU then reels off like 8-9 straight wins, and it's not even close watching their defense. They're just sunning dudes like the entire game. But as you mentioned, 0-3 against P5, so that'll be extremely interesting to watch. I agree with you there. All right, I'm gonna kick it back to the P4. Let's see. I got a running back and a linebacker. I think I'm gonna go running back here. I'm gonna go Texas A&M running back Reuben Owens. It's a crowded backfield in Aggieland. Reuben Owens' freshman year is hard to quantify for me because you've got an injured Connor Wegman. You've got the Jimbo Fisher, Bobby Petrino offense that there was a little bit of strife there. So it wasn't all cohesive. The team just in general did not perform up to snuff. But I think Reuben Owens, it's fair to say, it was kind of disappointing last year from what he was in high school. So I'm excited to see what he does. If he starts to emerge in spring, that's something I'm really interested about, Craven, when you go down there in spring ball. Like, what's the hype about Reuben Owens?
I would think every running back at Texas A&M jumped for joy when Colin Klein was hired as the offensive coordinator. Like, we've seen what Kansas State can do running the football with Deuce Vaughn and different running backs. Even when Colin Klein was playing, right? Like, the creativeness that they use in the running game to get into power is pretty fun to watch. I think that's going to be a lot of, I have this theory that small classification football is a hard adjustment, right? And I don't have any empirical data for this. This is just like anecdotal evidence, but there's multiple big time small school players that had really high hopes that became really good football players, but it took them a year or two, right? Like, they're not coming from Duncanville where they're playing against Cam. You know, at Duncanville, Cam Williams is blocking Colin Simmons every single day in practice, right? Like, that makes you a lot better. That makes the adjustment into college football easier. Going from El Campo, where you've been the fastest and most athletic player on every football field with pads since you were 5 years old, to playing against Alabama is a different thing. Like, that's hard if you come from Galena Park North Shore. You can't convince me it's not harder if you come from El Campo. So I think some of it was just culture shock, right? Like, holy shit, I used to be able to get around this. Like, I used to take that angle and that was a touchdown. I just got caught. Like, that takes some adjusting. I think after a year and understanding of what it is and catching up to the speed, we're going to see more of the Reuben Owens we saw for the Rice Birds. But I don't think he's going to be their lead back. I think he's going to be more Jaden Blue, right? Where he's a change of pace, a third down back, a big play guy, return, and he can work his way into being the number one back if he can earn that role and carve that niche.
Don't tell that small school rant to Shedeur Sanders, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, when your dad's Deion Sanders, that's probably, and I'm sure that there's exceptions to this rule. And again, maybe somebody could do the research and prove me wrong. I would just imagine that the speed of the game, if you've played, 6A football in South Dallas, is a little bit easier to catch up to than if you played at Liberty Hill or something like that, right? Like, I just think that's got to be true. Just like in our business, if you've interned at the New York Times, your adjustment into a major newspaper is going to be easier than if you were at the Taylor Daily Press like I was, right? Like, there's just levels to it.
When I watched Reuben Owens last year, and I don't have a hand timer on this, he did not seem to have the burst that some other running backs have. He does not have the Jaden Blue burst that I saw. He was getting caught a little bit. That's just what I kind of saw. Now, I'm not saying he's not athletic and can't get there, but I agree with you. I think there is a big transition from that.
Yeah, we'll see if a year of figuring that out like helps and he looks faster because he's playing faster, or if he's, there's plenty of guys that just haven't made that jump up. I haven't given up on Reuben Owens yet. I'm with you. Before we shared our list with each other before the show, he was like number two on my most excited to watch list as well. Like, I do think he's a really intriguing player. I'm not convinced he's going to live up to that five-star hype though.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say right now. And then my last pick was, I'm going to switch it up. It was going to be Anthony Hill, but we already talked about him a little bit. And as we were talking about UTSA's defense, I started to think of another person I'm very intrigued about, and that's cornerback Denver Harris. This year for Denver Harris, it's make it or break it time, because no one has ever doubted the football talent with him. I watched him in the state championship game. He's a beast, okay? But Texas A&M, it doesn't work out. He's suspended twice. LSU, he is basically put in witness protection program after the first game of the season. You're on your third chance, and it's three chances, and I mean – you can probably go JUCO after this, but like, this is it, man. This is it for Division One right now. And this is a guy who was on the Rising magazine for Dave Campbell's. He was a three-time state champion or whatever. Like we said, the football skills are all there, but this is a Joe Price vouch at UTSA, his former coach at North Shore, saying, I know Denver Harris. I know we can make this work. And if he can figure it out, he's going to be one of the best cornerbacks in the American.
Yeah, no doubt. It's also, having a head coach like Jeff Traylor, who's a former high school coach, who's not a throw the guy out to the wolves type dude, right? Like, he's going to bring him in house and develop him, and having Joe there to vouch for him, obviously, was a big deal. It's also a little bit easier, right? Because you don't have the same pressures at like A&M and at LSU as you do at UTSA. There's not 10 reporters looking up everything that you're doing all the time, right? Like, you can blend in a little bit more. Maybe a change of scenery helps him. Maybe just growing up, like, I'm sitting here as somebody who made a lot of mistakes in my 20s and stuff. And sometimes you just figure it out and grow up and realize that you're down to your last chance. And I don't think this is an overstatement to say, or an over-exaggeration to say. It's millions of dollars on the line for Denver Harris. If he figures it out, keeps his nose clean, proverbially, and just like stay, gets in class and plays on the football field and becomes the talent that we all know that he is. There's a former NFL rookie defensive player of the year that played cornerback at UTSA, right? Like, you can go make a lot of money playing cornerback and doing it well. And you can come out of a place like UTSA. Like, he is a future first, second, third round draft pick if he stays out of his own way. And maybe being on your third place and being on your third strike and getting a little bit older and closer to NFL eligibility wakes him up and he goes, hey, if I can figure this out for a year or two, it changes my life and everybody I love's life. And hopefully that's enough to keep him on the straight and narrow. Because like you said, I mean, you don't get A&M and LSU and five-star and all, like, you have the talent. It's just a matter of not being your own hurdle.
Well, it wasn't just him at Texas. I mean, we don't need to delve deep into the Texas A&M thing, but it wasn't just him.
That's right.
Yeah. A lot of guys that went there and had to have had some growing up to do and had to lead the program and, you know, take their own path. So,
and we've seen success stories like PJ Hall at SMU. Yeah. He was part of that same group that kind of got kicked out for some of that stuff, right? Accused of doing stuff in the locker room he shouldn't have been doing. And he's gone to SMU and he's played football and been, you know, I'm sure he's still a college student doing college student stuff, but, you know, has been out of, you know, been on the starting lineup, been in class, passed his class, all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you just need some new leadership around you. You know, maybe Joe Price is kind of uncle, big brother type that can kind of put him under his wing. Like you said, they have familiarity with yourself. And sometimes just being maybe in a smaller bubble that doesn't have so much pressure like A&M football or LSU football can also help a little bit.
Yeah, big time. All right, Craven, last pick here.
My last pick is going to be Savion Williams, wide receiver at TCU. The Horned Frogs have to figure out a way to get more explosive in the passing game and to be more productive in the red zone. It feels like having a unicorn at wide receiver would help with both of those things. Savion Williams is a freak. He's going to be on Andy Staples' freak list, or Bruce Feldman's freak list, I would imagine, when it comes out next year. Looks a lot like Quentin Johnston, but you can look at the production last year and see why TCU's offense wasn't as good, right? Quentin Johnston in 2022, 60 catches, 1,069 yards, 6 touchdowns. Last year, Savion Williams led TCU with 573 yards receiving. They just did not have the explosiveness on the edge. With only 19 more catches, Quentin Johnston had 500 more yards, you know what I mean? Like, they were just more explosive back in 2022. The Sonny Dykes, Kendall Briles offense kind of depends on that. And so if Savion can get better after the catch, can get better vertically, maybe having Josh Hoover in there helps that as well. He has a stronger arm than Chandler Morris, so maybe that helps with the verticality of the offense as well. But to me, everybody's going to talk about the TCU defense, and they probably should. But I need that offense to get better. I just don't see TCU being the keep teams to 15 points a game type team, right? If they're going to win football games, it's going to be because their offensive explosive, and they need Savion Williams to be the number one guy that demands double teams and gets over the top of a defense.
I think you're exactly right, too, and that's what I'm looking for. Because going into last year, the narrative out of TCU was like, yeah, you know, we lost Max Gunning, but actually Chandler Morris was starting over him before him. I know we lost Quentin Johnston, but Savion Williams, like, we really think he can be just what Quentin Johnston was, and it just never happened, right? And I don't know what all went on behind the scenes with Savion Williams, if there was something that was hampering him or an injury or something like that, but he just was not near as explosive of an offense as it was with Quentin Johnston and Max Duggan. It's a proven year for Kendall Briles in that offense. I think them as a unit are one of the most interesting, like, sides of the ball on a team to watch in Texas. We should do that draft next, like sides of the ball that are most interesting for a team in Texas.
Yeah, just teams that are interesting, right? I think I could make a case that the three most interesting teams in going into 2024 are TCU, SMU, North Texas. Like, I think the teams in DFW are in that kind of rubber road situation. SMU, because they're moving in conferences and moving up to the P4, and how do they handle being with the big boys after finally having conference championship success for the first time since the 80s. TCU, with kind of this Jekyll and Hyde, go to the national championship, now you're 5-7, like, what are you as a program in year three? And then North Texas was so good offensively and so bad defensively that it's like, does one go down while the other one goes up, and what are the net positives and gains for that one as a second year program in a conference that's pretty winnable? And so I think those three teams are fascinating, and they have a lot of players on it that become fascinating because of it.
Yeah. All right. That's all we've got for today. That was our player draft, and I'm sure we can do this again in 2 or 3 weeks because there's so many guys in Texas to talk about, but
there'll be new ones because of the portal.
Yeah. New ones. Exactly. Because of the portal. But anyway, so these next few weeks are magazine seasons for us here at Dave Campbell. So Craven and I will be out on the road. We'll be hunkering down in April and May to get this magazine pushed out. We'll be back next week, still podcasting every Wednesday at 2 p.m. So thanks for tuning in, and thank y'all so much for listening. And I'm going to have to redo this ending because I didn't really think about how I was going to end this show.
Everybody thinks about how they take the plane off the ground. Nobody ever thinks in podcasting how to land it. It's tried and true, man. You're not the first one. You won't be the last.
I'm actually doing the airplane, like, sweating.
Yeah. Tale as old as time, or at least like 2006, whenever podcasts started to get big. I don't really know off the top of my head.
Yep. All right. Podcast over.